And we're holding on Kofiyud Amud Aleph, fourth line. We learned yesterday about a couple of cases involving a planter, a shasla, and arguments between him and the Balabais as far as the division of the produce of the land, and what happens if what happened. The last case we learned about was where it was a vineyard, where it wasn't a shasla, where it was a case of a mashkan involving a vineyard, where the vineyard the vines aged and stopped producing fruit after a few years. So now the Gemara continues with other cases involving mashkantas and dinim with that, which is not directly related, therefore, to the topic of our parak. For most of this Amud is going to be dealing with this digression of other cases involving mashkantas, and then further down on the Amud, we'll get back to cases of arisa. So the Gemara tells, "Hahuk shtara to have ksibet shnin." There was a shtar of a mashkan. Now, in particular, we have to focus on a mashkanta de surah. We learned back in Perek Ezu Neshech that now, like this, you borrow money from somebody, so you're using your field or vineyard or what have you as collateral for the loan. Now we talked about over there. You have to be careful about issues of rivis, because if you have the typical idea would be that the malva would get to eat the payrus of that field or vineyard over a period of years. The problem is that you have a potential issue of rivis over there, because the amount that he may get out of the field or vineyard may end up being much more than the value of the loan. So you have different ways of arranging it. In particular, we said in the Gemara over there, you have something called Mashkanta de Surah, the type that they used to do in the city of Surah, where you have that there's a fixed amount established per year that the loan is going to be amortized by that. We're going to say, for example, that we're going to assume that the value of the produce of this vineyard is going to be, let's say, $100 every year. The loan was 1,000, and therefore we say at the end of the 10 years, regardless how large or how little the crops were, then the loan is completely amortized and paid off, and there's nothing further. So that kind of thing is called a mashkanta de surah, and we said in the Gemara there that such a thing is allowed, because it's not a given that every year he's going to have $100 worth of payrus. There may be, after all, it's variable. It depends on the weather. It depends, as we learned earlier on the Perek, on things like locusts and other kinds of natural disasters that can hit it. There might well be years where he gets nothing at all, and therefore, even if on the other hand, other years he gets more, and even if it does in the end come out that he is getting more than the value of the loan, then that's fine. The whole thing would only be ribis d'rabbanan anyway, and in this case, it's not even ribis d'rabbanan; it's completely mutter. So now we're going to have some cases involving this kind of mashkanta de surah. So hahu shtara to have a ksibe shnin stoma. There was a shtar of a mashkan, where it just said years. It said that the field or the vineyard or whatever is given over to the malva for years, and after those years it will return to the loiva, and it didn't say how many. Malva oima shalosh for loiva oima shtayim. So the malva says that it was 3 years. The loiva says that the deal was only for 2 years. Now kodim malva v'achlinu l'peri. In this case, what happened was the malva went ahead and ate the peiros of the third year. And now the loiva is saying, wait, that third year didn't belong to you. I'm telling you that it was only 2 years, and you had no right to the and you had no right to the third year's payrus. So therefore, so now me Neman, which one of them do we believe? The Ran points out on the face of it, when the shtar says shnin, years in plural without specifying, miyot rabim shnayim, so that would be a strong reason to say that it was in fact 2 years and not more than that. But the Ran points out a number of reasons why not. One of them being the fact is that since the loiva allowed the malva to take that third year's payrus and only now is bringing him to Beis Din, so that kind of weakens his claim that it really was only 2 years. So now the question is, which one is Naaman? Rabbi Yehuda says that since the land is in the chazakah of its owner, therefore it's considered the loiva is the one who's muchzak, the malva is only having the payrus of it temporarily. Therefore, he's the one who's muchzak, and therefore, if the malva wants to be able to keep those 3 year payrus, then he'd need to bring the proof that in fact there was a third year of that mashkanta. Rav Kahana, Omer Peres Pachezka, Sechleihen Kaimi. Rav Kahana says no, because after all, in this case, the Malva ate the fruit. Therefore, he's the one who is muchzak in those Peres, and therefore the loiva would have to be bringing the one, would have to be the one who's bringing the proof. The Hilchzak, I would say, the Rav Kahana, and the Halacha is in fact like Rav Kahana, Omer Peres Pachezka, Sechleihen Kaimi, where he says that the Peres are considered to be in the ownership of the one who ate them. So therefore, in this case, it would be the loiva who has to bring the proof that in fact the mashkanta was only for 2 years, not three, and then he'd be entitled to reimbursement for those payers. Okay, the question is, don't we know though, how could we say that? Don't we also know that the halacha is like Rav Nachman, where Rav Nachman says in a different context that the owner, that the land is considered to be in the chazaka of the owner. So this was a case we had in the previous perek. We had a case where a person rented out a bathhouse to somebody else, where the deal was that he said the rent was going to be 12 gold dinar per year, one gold dinar per month. And the question is, it was a leap year. And the question is, who's entitled to the rent for that 13th month? Do we say that he gets the 13th month thrown in for free? Or do we say that he has to pay for it? Or do we say half and half? And in the end, we said over there, we have this on Daf Kufal of Kufbeis. And we said over there that Rav Nachman had said, therefore he's the muchzak, and therefore the owner of the bathhouse, and therefore he is in fact entitled to the 13th rent for the 13th month. So we know that the halacha is like Rav Nachman in that. So we see that they are kalka b'cheskas ba'alaha imedas. Why all of a sudden are we saying over here that the land is not considered to be in the chazaka of the loiva, but rather we focus on the fact that the peiros are in the chazaka of the malva? And the answer is hosam milsa d'lea vidalei glui. The difference is over there, that's not something which is going to eventually be revealed. The fact is, sure, we can go according to the karka, but the question was over there, not so much who's muchzak in the land. The question is, the fact is, on the one hand, he said 12 dinar per year, which implies a year, no matter what, whether it's a 12-month year or a 13-month year. On the other hand, then he said a dinar per month. And so the question was whether we, as we learned over there on Daf Kuf Beis, whether we go according to Loshen Rishon or Loshen Achron. Do we go according to what he said originally, or do we go according to what he said at the end? And what about if he said the other way around? What if he first mentioned the monthly rent and then the annual rent? So there, it's not so much the question is even we know, fine, he's muchzik in the land, but we still have to figure out whether we go according to Loshen Rishon or Loshen Achron. So we have to take that into consideration. Here, we're talking about something which is eventually going to be revealed, meaning, in other words, sooner or later, the Edom on the Shtar are going to come and tell us what it actually was. Fine, the Shtar only says Shnin, years, without specifying how many, but sooner or later, the Edom are going to come and tell us how many years did they actually arrange at the time. So therefore, it may well happen that, so what's going to happen? If we tell the Malva, well, then you have to give back the payers of that third year, or you have to reimburse the loiva for those payers. The 13th month was in the case of the bathhouse. That's something else. But now we're saying the case is over here that the malva and loiva are arguing about whether the mashkanta was for 2 years or three. So the question is about the third year.
And the Edom are going to remember.
So the Edom will remember. But the problem is, what happens? So now, suppose we tell the malva, look, kauka b'cheskas ba'alah ha-kayemis, like Rav Yehuda is saying, and like Rav Nachman is saying, therefore, give the loiva back to Paris for the third year. What's going to happen if eventually the Edom come and say, in fact, it was a three-year mashkanta? Well, then we're going to have to go to Beis Din again and give the Paris back to the Malva. We don't want to be matriach the Beis Din twice unnecessarily. So therefore, so let's leave well enough alone for now. Yes, kalka b'cheskas ba'alah ha-kayemes, but in this case, since the malva already is in possession of the payers, we may as well leave him in possession of them until we find out the facts. And then at that point, we can go to Beis Din once and get the whole matter taken care of, rather than we're going to take it away from the malva on the basis of that the loiva has the chazak on the land. And later on, we may have to take it back from the loiva and give it back to the malva and go to Beis Din again. So then we don't want to do that. In fact, the Rosh brings in this connection that what happens, for example, now you might have in between, the Edim have passed away. And what happens, you may conceivably even have that other people who knew, maybe they're not aged, but at least there were people who knew what happened, they may have forgotten. In that case, the Rosh says that, in fact, we would go then appoint Rav Nachman and Rav Yehuda, and we would say that Kaka B'cheskas Ba'alah HaKayamas. The Rosh says, when we say over here, the Halacha is like Rav Kahana, that we go according to the Peiris or in the Chazakah of the Malveh, that would specifically be when, as the Gemara is saying over here, there's a likelihood that eventually the Edom are going to come up, are going to come back, but not when... not when the Edom have since passed away, and we don't know whether there's anybody else who remembers it, then we're not necessarily going to say that.
When you said Mashkanta de Surah, I missed.
So the Mashkanta de Surah, we said, was a type of mortgage where we said that the field or vineyard or whatever is given over to the loiva. The payrus of it are given to the loiva for a certain period of years. He's entitled to the payrus, and with that, the loan will be amortized. The loan will be paid off over the years, and at the end of a certain number of years, then that's it. The loan is considered paid off, regardless whether he got enough payrus to
or too many or too little
or whatever. It doesn't matter because the deal is that there's nothing further to be paid at the end of the year.
Yeah, because
he could have gotten too little. Therefore, it's allowed even if he ended up getting too much. Right. Okay. Another point, by the way, that Rishonim bring up is that why don't we say that the Malva has a migra. He could have hidden the Shtar Mashkin and claimed that it's 3 years and I already bought it. So there's a couple of explanations about that. One is that he doesn't actually have the Shtar in his possession; it's in the hands of a third party. And another possibility is the loiva does the machal before the end of the third year. In Bava Basra, it talks about that when you're 3 years is enough for a chazaka, but if during the 3 years the original owner or the claimed owner protests, does a machal in front of Beis Din and says, in fact, it's not his, he stole it, or he whatever. Or his father stole it or whatever, and therefore I'm being moichad, and that undoes the chazaka, and now the guy has to be careful with his shtar. So here we'd be talking about that the loiva came and protested before the end of the third year. And a third possibility is maybe that he only didn't eat all the payrus of the third year, only some of them. So when we say that he has a chazaka of 3 years, would only be if he ate all the payrus, because that's what a person usually does, but this is the produce of his own field. So there are different possibilities over here why we don't say that the malva has a migri. On top of that, also, the Rishonim point out, we don't necessarily say migri lahoitzi. We don't ever say that a person has a migri in order to take something away from somebody else, just in order to keep what he has. But in this case, that is what we're talking about, where he wants to keep the payrus that he has. Okay, so that's one case then. Another case, also involving a mashkanta de sura, what happened now in the previous case, the loiva had said it was only 2 years and the malva says it was three. Now what happens if both of them agree that it was for more than three years, but no, that it was 3 years or more, the malva says it was 5 years, the loiva says it was three. So the loiva says, I see the shtarach, bring me your shtar and let's see what it says. Omalei, now the malva says, shtarach irkasli, I lost the shtar. Now, in Bava Basra, again, we're going to have the whole matter over there of Chazaka, where after 3 years, a person is not necessarily expected to hold on to his shtar. You know, nowadays, you buy real estate, it's listed in a central registry, but back then, it wasn't like that. Sales of land were a private matter between two people, so you'd have a person is given a shtar, a person is given a deed that he owns the property, but you can't expect him to hold on to that forever. Over time, shtar is... deteriorate or whatever. So therefore, after 3 years, we figure when there's no macha, a person is not really careful to hold on to his shtar anymore. And therefore, when he has, as long as he has a valid taina of how he came to be in possession of this land, now we're gonna learn in Bava Basra. You can't have, for example, that a person is saying that I have this land for 3 years because I saw it was unoccupied land and I took it over and I figured nobody's bothering me. That's not a valid taina. A valid taina would be you sold it to me, or you gifted it to me, or I took it in payment of a debt that you had defaulted on, or the same thing that my father got, any of these things, whatever. Those are valid tainas. And now if he says, now I've been in possession of it undisturbed 3 or more years and there was no macha, then I didn't bother keeping my shtar anymore. And those are valid tainas. And that's the subject of the third parak of Bava Basra, Cheska Sabatim. So here the Malva says, I lost my shtar, which in and of itself is a valid claim. So now Amar Rav Yehuda Malva Neman. So in that case, Rav Yehuda says, we believe the Malva, that it was 5 years. Migu di iboy amar lekuchi biyodi. Because as a migu, he could have said that he bought the land altogether. Because once 3 years have passed, again, he's not expected to hold on to his shtar. So now it's one thing, the Ramban, the Ran talk about, it's one thing if we have Edim that say how long the mashkin was, then yeah, we don't believe him with a migri, because then we have it's a migri against Edim. Well, more to the point, if the Edim are saying that it was a mashkin, not they're saying that the amount of time, if it was, then we don't have a case based in the first place, then it's just an open and shut case. What we mean is if there were Edim that it was in fact a mashkin, then we can't believe him anymore to say that it was bought, because then it's a migri against Edim. So what we're talking about over here is that we're talking about over here that there's no edim whether it was a mashkin or not. There is also the Rashba actually mentions the Rashba mentions a possibility, although the Ramban disagrees with this, that if the Malva were to claim that after the mashkin is over, then I bought it from him and now I have chazaka of 3 years, he would in fact be believed, because after all, the edim who say that he came there with a mashkin are not contradicting that. So therefore, now in this case, he would have a migri. But here we're talking about, anyway, there's no edim about that it was a mashkin in the first place. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is saying he has a migri, he could claim to begin with that he bought it rather than it was a mashkin. But the Gemara says, Amalei Rav Papa, Rav Ashi, Rav Zvid v'Rav Avira lo svira lo hu hadu Rabbi Yehuda. Rav Zvid and Rav Avira, you should know, disagree with what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. It's an interesting point that Rav Papa is saying this to Rav Ashi. Rav Papa was actually one of Rav Ashi's predecessors as the Rosh Hashiva of Surah. So what is he doing telling Rav Ashi? As if they're colleagues. Maybe we mean it. Maybe this is a different Rav Papa. The usual Rav Papa would be the generation before Rav Ashi. Anyway. So maybe
there are different.
There's usually this Papa Ba'aba. We had the Papa Bar Shmuel. Well, the Papa Bar Shmuel we said was even earlier. We had him a day or two ago. But maybe. Anyway, so Amalei Rav Papa Rav Ashi, Rav Zvid v'Rav Avira lo svira lo hu hadu Rav Yehuda.
You should know. It's not this,
because again, it doesn't sound like the kind of way that a Rebbe would be telling his Talmud. He's telling him to him more like a colleague or even more like a Talmud. You should know that.
I guess be his son.
I don't know. Maybe. Well, yeah. Anyway, so Amalei Rav Papa Rav Ashi, Rav Zvid v'Rav Avira lo svira lo hu hadu Rav Yehuda. You should know that Rav Zvid and Rav Avira disagree with this concept of Rav Yehuda that he would have a migri and he could claim that it was born. My timer. The reason is because like this, it's one thing when it comes to a document of sale. Yes, once a person has bought a field free and clear, then he doesn't expect it. We don't expect him to keep his shtar for more than 3 years. But high shtara, but the shtar over here of mashkanta de sura, given to the guvina coin. The fact is, why does the malva have a shtar in the first place? Because he wants to use it to collect on the loan. The whole idea is he has the mashkanta for X number of years, and the idea is that he's getting paid. The loan is getting amortized over the years by the expected payers of the field or vineyard. So he has the shtar for the purpose of collecting the debt. Therefore, Mizhar Zohir Bey, on the contrary, you would expect him to be careful not to lose that shtar. So therefore, when he comes and claims that he... So it's one thing when it comes to a shtar mecher, again, 3 years have passed, nobody was ma'aro, nobody was moicher, therefore I have no reason to be careful with my shtar anymore. But now he agrees that it was a shtar mashkanta, and it's needed to know how many years he's entitled to eat the payrus, and he has the shtar for that purpose. So we can expect that a malva is going to be very, very careful with that shtar until the years are over. So when he says he lost it, we're not going to believe him. On the contrary, say Rav Avira and Rav Zvid. They're going to say mich pashut kav shel shtar. It's much more likely that he's hiding the shtar. Because he thinks to himself, this way I can get away with eating it for 2 extra years. So therefore, we're going to tell him that you're going to forfeit the karka after 3 years unless you can produce that shtar. And then he produces the shtar, and then we see if it actually says 5 years, like he says, then good, he gets the 2 extra years, but otherwise not. Okay. So the Gemara continues, By that logic, then, so if you're telling me that according to, so going back to the Yehuda, Rashi explains the following question is going to be according to the Yehuda. is going to be on Rabbi Yehuda, where Rabbi Yehuda again is saying that he has a migui, he could say that he bought it. So Elamayata, according to Rabbi Yehuda, when if you're going to say that a person is believed with such a claim, hai mashkanta de surah, then in general, in the case of a mashkanta de surah that we've been talking about all along, de kasvi hochi, and we write as follows in the shtar, the Chachamim made the takana that we write in the shtar as follows, b'mipak, b'mishlam shnaya ilain, when these years are over, tipuk arado b'lochsaf, then this land will return to the loiva without any further payment of money. Because again, we talked about an ezer neshach over there. There are different kinds of mashkantas. There are some that are considered outright ribis. There are others that are considered ribis dirabonim. And then you have this kind of mashkanta de sura, where we say that the loan is actually considered to be paid off over the years, X amount, a fixed amount per year. And at the end of it, the loan is considered paid off, even if the malva got far less than the amount of the loan. And yes, even if he got far more as well. So now the question is, so we have that kind of arrangement. But if you're telling me, Rabbi Yehuda, that if he hides the shtar, it's possible for him to hide the shtar and get away with it on the grounds of a migui. So exactly that. Hecha the kavsha the shtar mashkanta. Suppose that he hides the shtar of that lays out the mashkanta. And he claims I bought it. Would we say that we're appointed to Rabbi Yehuda, we're going to believe him? How could the Chachamim make a takana? Fine, we're trying to avoid issues of ribis over here, but are the Chachamim going to make a takana in such a way that he could end up losing out, where the Malva could claim that he bought the property and that he keeps it permanently? So how, according to Rabbi Yehuda, how can we say such a thing? So according to Rabbi Avira and Rabbi Zvid, yeah, they're saying we don't believe him with such a migui, but according to Rabbi Yehuda, how can he even say such a thing? So Tosfos discusses a number of details on this, and one thing is it emerges from what Tosfos is saying, the possibility that for the question really is the implicit question is, why is the question specifically on Elameata now that we're saying even without Rabbi Yehuda? So Tosfos brings up the point, after all, 3 years is enough for a chazaka, so how does that fit with this Gemara anyway? So Tosfos explains that we're saying, for example, that what happens during the 3 years again when the original owner is supposed to make a chazaka, is supposed to make a macha. So he's going to claim, for example, that he stole it, and he's saying during the 3 years, I want you, Beistin, to know that this guy is holding on to it with Gezel. He stole it, and eventually I plan to take him to Beistin and get it back. That's the kind of macha we're talking about over here. Here, by mashkanta, the Gemara is thinking that maybe the Chachamim did not make a takana, that he has to be moicha in the first place, and so now the question is, what's going to happen after 3 years if there was no macha? So Tosfos goes on to discuss that point in some detail. Marsha then brings up a point that according to that, then really the question is not specifically only on Rabbi Yehuda. The question would be in general. The Gemara could have very well asked the question that in general, we have a Mishnah that says Chazaka 3 years in Bava Basra. So how does that fit with the concept of a Mashkanta Desura? So Marsha says that actually the question... The question might be more on what we just said a few lines ago from Rav Papa, who distinguished between a shtar mecher and a shtar mashkanta. That again, as Rav Papa had said, according to Rav Zvid and Rav Avira, a shtar mashkanta, a person is much more careful to hold on to. So now the question would be on him then, so what happens then if he, so what happens then if after 3 years, so even if he's not moida, even if the other guy is claiming that it was a mashkanta, then he's gonna always have to. Then the question is the other way around. Can't we have then that a person sold a field and now he's gonna falsely claim that it was a mashkanta, and he's gonna say, well, you should have held on to your shtar. And what do you mean? I should have held on to my shtar. You sold it to me outright. Yeah, but I'm going to Tosfos, the question may actually be the other way around, not on Rabbi Yehuda, as Rashi says, but rather the other way around. Well, if we're going to say that with shtar mashkanta, a person always has to hold on to it, what's going to prevent a seller from falsely claiming later on that it was a mashkanta and saying, well, you didn't hold on to your shtar, so tough luck, and I didn't make a macha because I'm only obligated to make a macha if you were gazlan and you're not a gazlan, I'm telling you that it was a mashkanta.
So the seller sold the person a field.
So the seller sells a field, and now after 3 years, he wants to claim, I didn't sell it to you. It was only a mashkanta, and how do we guard against that?
So keeping the receipt could be more important than keeping the mashkanta.
Right, but that's the question. In other words, the fact is, the Mishnah tells us that you don't have to keep it more than 3 years. That's the question. In other words, according to Tosfos, the question is more on the according to Tosfos, at least the way Maharshal learns it, the question is more on Rav Papa. If you're telling me that there's a difference, a shtar mecha, a person's not expected to have to hold on to after 3 years, but a shtar mashkanta, he better hold on to it, or else it's his loss. Well, then what's to prevent the seller from falsely claiming that it was a mashkanta, and then when the guy says, I lost my shtar, well, I'm sorry, a mashkanta, you have to hold on to your shtar. Anyway, Omalei, so that was the question. Ravina asked Rav Ashi. Omalei, so Rav Ashi answers, Hosam takino le rabbanon, because in that case of a mashkanta, the Chachamim made a takona, the Moriara Yohiv Taska, that it's the owner of the land, the loiva, who's going to continue paying the real estate taxes on the property, the Kori Kauya, and also that he's going to be the one who's responsible for digging the ditch around the field, which they would use. So there were different ways of marking the border between one field and another. So he's either a wall or a broom of earth or a ditch. So in this case, we're talking about it's his responsibility to be repairing, to be digging and repairing that ditch around the edge. That's the owner. So therefore, by the fact that he continues to pay the real estate taxes and the fact that he continues to be responsible for the ditch, that itself demonstrates that he still has a certain ownership of it, as opposed to if he had sold the field outright, then he wouldn't be doing that anymore. So therefore, that helps us see the difference. Well, Ravina asked, out of the less lookout, so what about if you have a field where you don't have a ditch around it, the lo yohiv taska, or you have, and you have, there's no real estate taxes on it. There can be for one reason or another In fact, elsewhere, Rashi mentions, for example, there was the Mishnah in Sukkah mentions a place called Moitza, from which they would take Aravos to stand around the Mizbeach during the days of Sukkot. And then they would walk around the Mizbeach with the Arabis. The Mishnah mentions there that they would bring the Arabis from a place called Moitza near Yerushalayim. And the Gemara says that the place was also called Klania, which means free of taxes. It was a place that was a place where the government had given them a rebate and said they don't have to pay real estate taxes. Well, you may have such places then. So then what's his proof that he owns it? Omalei. So then Ravashi says he borrowed the machoye. Well, in that case, then yes, he has to make a machal. During the 3 years, yes, even though normally a machor is only necessary in order to say the guy is a gazlan and I plan to take him to Beis Din. In this case, the machor would be to go to Beis Din and clarify to them, this is not a sale, this is a mashkanta. I don't have any proof because I don't have any
so
proof.
So he has to do that.
So he'd have to do that. Otherwise, so he asks, so Ravina asks, lo im chamai, and what happens if he doesn't do the machor? Then Ravashi tells him, well, in that case, that's his problem. Too bad. He has his things to do. Either he can be paying the taxes and digging the ditch, or if he doesn't have that, he has to make a macha. And if he doesn't bother to make that macha during those 3 years, because he thinks, for example, that a macha is only necessary in the case of a gazlan, then that's his problem. Then you're right. Then if the malva wants to claim that it was in fact a sale, then we really have no recourse against him.
And he has to dig the dash. And pay the tax and dig the ditches?
The pastures, it means both, but maybe it means one or the other. I don't know. Either one.
He's in a place that has no taxes. You can just dig the ditch really nice.
But let's say it's a place where they also don't have ditches. That was what.
Right. Yeah, I forgot that.
Okay. Fine. So that was all kind of a digression from the topic of Arisim in our Perek. This was all because, again, we were talking about, we started by talking about arguments between the Oris and the Balabais as far as the terms of the, as far as certain details of the Arisos, how much I'm entitled to be paid for how much I've worked so far. So now getting back to Arisim. The Gemara says, now suppose we have Taka, an argument between the Oris and the Balabais, what the terms were. The Oris claims that I came into the field and I started working on condition that I'm going to get half produce. Or Balabais, and the Balabais says it was only Lashlish Haradi, I brought him down only to get one third. So, Minemon, which one of them do we believe? Rabbi Yehuda Omer Bala Bayis Neman. Rabbi Yehuda says, we believe the Bala Bayis, therefore he's entitled to only one third. Rabbi Nachman Omer, Hakol Kaminhag HaMedina. And Rabbi Nachman says you have to go according to whatever the local minhag is. You have to see what Arisin get in this area. Now, even when we say the Bala Bayis is Neman, Rashi points out, we will make him swear a Shavuos Heses. In general, we have there's a concept, which we're going to learn in Masechta Shavuos in detail, Rez Hashem, that in many cases where Midaraisa and even earlier Midarabanan, there was no Shavua, eventually in the time of the Gemara, in the time of Rabbi Nachman, in fact, they made a takona of Shavuos Heses, where he's going to have to take that Shavua. So in this case, when we say Bala Bayis Neman, it means Rabbi Yehuda says we're going to make him swear Shavuos Heses. Rav Nachman is saying, "Bachlal, Hakol Kaminhag HaMedina, we have to go according to the Minhag HaMedina, and we have to see what the local Arisim get." So the Gemara says, "Sover minod loy pligi." Now the Chachamim thought to say that Rav Yehuda and Rav Nachman are not actually arguing. Ha ba'os ba'asur deshokel Arisa palga. Rav Nachman would be talking about in a place where the Oris usually gets a half, so therefore the Bala Bayis is claiming it was only one third. Even a Shavuos Heses is not going to allow us to say that he only said one third because it's against Minhag HaMedina. And Ha Ba'asur the Shokel Arisa Tilta, as opposed to Rav Yehuda, would be talking about in a place where the Oris regularly gets one third. So that's what the Chum thought to say that. But Rav Mori, the son of the daughter of Shmuel, who we've talked about before, his mother was kidnapped by a goy and impregnated by her, and then Rav Mori was born from that. In other places in the Gemara, it calls him Rav Mori Bar Rochel. He himself was born as a yid because his mother, after all, was a yid anyway, and by the time he was born, his father had become a ger, but his father is still not considered related to him. And halacha, we're going to learn an interesting detail about that towards the end of Bava Basra. Amalahu Rav Mori brought the Bas Shmuel, Hochi Amar Abaye tells them you should know. Abaye said no. Afila ba'aswa the shokel arisa pauga pligi. In fact, the machlokas is even in an area where the oris usually gets one third. We usually gets a half. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a balabais neman. The iboi omas schiri lakitihu. The reason why Rabbi Yehuda says that we believe him is because he has a migui. He could say, "Bchalal, he's not even an oris. I hired him. A socher would be that I hired him for a certain number of days or weeks or whatever, and I'm paying him in money." Or Lakiti, he's my seasonal worker, and either way, in other words, he doesn't have to, like this, you're claiming that you're my artist, you're not my artist, I just hired you for a certain salary, or for a certain whatever, so Rabbi Yehuda argues, he has a migri, and therefore, to say that, and therefore, he'd have the ability instead to say that you are in fact an artist, but you only get one third. Meanwhile, Rabbi Nachman is saying that no, we don't do that, and Rabbi Nachman is going to say that a migri doesn't help against Minhag HaMedina. Since Minhag HaMedina is that the oris over here gets a half, then we don't accept his migri to say, therefore, that it would be only one third. And the halacha is usually like Rabbi Nachman and Dinim Mominus, and so it is over here, so therefore the oris would, in fact, be entitled to half.
If he's the oris or if he's either way, most of the time in the contract.
If there's a contract, then good, but we have to then produce the contract and see. Here's another case. Now we know that when a Baal Chayv comes to collect the debt. So if the loiva defaults and doesn't pay, then the malva goes and takes from karka, and that he can take even from Yisoimim. Even the loiva, meanwhile, passed away, he can collect the land that the Yisoimim inherited from their father. Now, though, you also have to consider that the Yisoimim over the years, since their father passed away, may have improved the property, whether it's that they fertilized it or they planted trees in it or did other things to raise the value of the property. Yeah. So now the Baal Chayv, the Malveh, is not entitled to collect from that Shvach. He can collect from the land itself, but not from the Shvach of Yisoimim. So now what happens is Yisoimim Omim Onu Hishvachnu, suppose that the Yisoimim claim about the piece of land that the Malveh is going to take away, that we improve this land, and therefore you're not entitled to that Shvach. If you end up taking the land, you're going to have to reimburse us for the Shvach. Well, yeah, you're going to have to take less of the land, you're going to have to reimburse us for the Shvach or whatever, yeah. And the Baal Chayv claims that it's their father who improved it. So now, later on in the Gemara, actually, we're going to talk about various details that we're talking about over here. And even though the Gemara is only going to bring that in the Maskana, in fact, the Ramban points out, we have to say, even by the beginning, that these details apply, namely the field is an Aposiki, that he specifically said, this field is going to be mortgaged towards the debt and all towards the loan, and also that that the loan equals the value of the land plus the shvach. So therefore, in that case, that would be more of a reason for him to take the shvach as well. In other words, if the loan was 100 and the land plus the shvach is 120, he certainly can't take the shvach anyway, regardless of who added the shvach, because then he'd be taking 120 for a $100 loan. So necessarily, we have to be talking about that the loan was in fact 120. And the land plus the shvach equals 120. So he is entitled to the full land. The only question is, if the shvach was made by the yisurim, then he doesn't have the right to that.
Yeah, but if the loan was 120, you get 120. You mean?
But then he can't take from shvach that was added by the yisurim. He can take the 100. He can take the 100 of. He can take the land, but he'd have to reimburse them 20. And then he'd have to take what's available. Yeah. Anyway, so almila hovi raya. The question is then, who has to bring the proof? Sover of Chanina Lameima out of Cheskas Yasmi Kaima, Rav Chanina thought to say that the land is in the chazaka of its owner, and therefore it would be the Baal Choyv, the Malva, who would have to bring the proof that their father had improved the property, and therefore, and if not, then he can't collect the shvach from them. But the Gemara says, Omalahu Hahu Sover. But a certain old Talmud Chacham told them, or Amalei, really, it's supposed to be, because it would be to Rav Chanina, Hahu Sover. Tosfos elsewhere mentions maybe other Yoan. Maybe, or maybe it just means any a random old Talmud Chacham. Anyway, he told them no. Chochi Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan said no. In this case, Al Yisoimim Lahavi Raya. It would be the Yisoimim that have to bring the proof that they improved the property. My timer, Ara Kivdul Govina Kaima, because the land, after all, is going to be collected. Because the Baal Choyv is entitled to this land, and again, the difference is, in other words, so regardless, he's going to be taking this plot of land. The only question is whether he's going to be reimbursing them for the shvach or not. So, but one way or the other, again, as the Ramban had said, as the Maskana is going to be, we're talking about where the field is in Akwasiki. So, by definition, he was going to be taking this particular land to begin with. Therefore, Commander Gavya Damya. Therefore, it's considered as if he had already collected it. So therefore, it's considered as if he had already collected it, and therefore, va'ala yisaimim lahavi raya, and therefore the yisaimim would have to be bringing the raya because I'm motzi mechavel of raya. So, in effect, the point is that we consider as though the land was already given to him, and he needs to, and he just needs to reimburse them, So we're saying that one way or the other, if he's getting this land, in effect, the Yisoimim are the ones who are trying to claim from him to reimburse them. So Omer Abaya, Afanan Nami Tanena. So Abaya says, in fact, we learn a Mishnah like that, that implies like that. Now the Mishnah describes, this is in Bava Basra in the second parak. You have a number of dinim over there in the second parak of Bava Basra as far as things that have to be kept a certain distance away from something else. You have between neighbors where one person has something that could damage somebody else's thing by its proximity, and therefore he has those rules how close he's allowed to have it. For example, a burrow close to a wall and different things like that. Then you have further on in the parak that talks about similar kinds of things around the city. Now, one rule is that it mentions over there you want to have the area close to the city is empty, is open land. It makes the city look nicer. Al derech, like you have by the Orei Halavim, where you have a migrash, of a couple of thousand amas around it. So here, it's not a couple of thousand amas; it's 50 amas. But the point is, you have that. If a tree is within 50 amas of the city, then it's going to be chopped down. Now, the question is, what happens? You have an argument between the owner of the tree and the people of the city. He claims, my tree was here first. So fine, I understand you have the right to chop it down to beautify the city, but nevertheless, you have to reimburse me for it because my tree was here first and I planted it behet. They're claiming that, no, you planted it be'isser when the city was already here. So who has to bring the raya? So the Mishnah describes Sopik. That if you're not sure which one came, Suffolk Zekodim, if you're not sure what came first, the tree or the city, then he's obligated to chop it down, and the city does not have to reimburse him. So Rashi points out now, again, earlier in that parak, when you have, for example, when you have a tree that's near an individual person's burr, then we say that then we say there can be a case where he doesn't even have to chop down the tree at all. There can be a case where he planted his tree first, and later on the other guy came and dug his burr within a certain distance of that. We don't require the first guy to chop down his tree, because if anything, you should have moved your burr further away. So therefore, we say in the case of a suffix, we don't require him to cut down the tree. Here, regardless, the tree is going to be cut down to beautify the city. The only question is whether he's entitled to reimbursement, and we say hamotzi mechavel avaraya, because if you want reimbursement for your tree, then prove that you were here first. Well, so the same thing, alma kivin de mekatz kaima. So we see, since the tree is going to be cut down regardless, amrinamle, we tell the owner of the tree, I see raya ushko, bring a raya, and then you can collect from the city. So the same thing over here. Rabbi says, "Kiven high shtara, kiven de la guvina kaima." Since again, the shtar about the shvach that you want to collect from the assignment, the shtar is going to be collected. We're going to be collecting based on the shtar anyway. We're going to be taking this karka anyway on the basis of the shtar. Kamanda gavya damya. Therefore, we can consider it as if it was already collected, and therefore vala yisem lahaviraya, and therefore that bears out Rabbi Yochanan's point that the yisomim are going to be the ones who have to bring the raya. So Abaye says you don't really need Rabbi Yochanan to be telling us that beferush. We could deduce that from that case of that mission. Okay, how about another case? Aisu yasmi raya deinu ashbahu. What happens now if the yisomim bring the proof that in fact they're the ones who improve the property? So now, okay, it's clear that the malva can't. It's clear that the malva can't take the entire thing. He's going to have to reimburse them somehow. So again, we're talking about over here. Let's say so the debt was 120. The land plus the shvach is in fact worth 120, but he can't collect from their shvach. Therefore, he's going to only be able to collect from whatever's available. Yes, so he'll collect the land, which is he'll collect the land plus the shvach, which is 120, and he's going to reimburse them 20. The question is, so Rav Chanina thought to say, when he removes them, what we do is we figure out an appropriate area of the land and we give it back to them. In other words, what we do is, in our case, for example, the malva will take 5/6 of the field and return and leave them 1/6 of it. So that way, in other words, that is a 1/6 of 120 is 20. So that way they get back their 20 that way. So Rav Chanina thought that we do that. But the Gemara says, Veloihi, it's not in fact so. Bidomi, Mesalkin and Lahu, he doesn't have to give them part of the land. Instead, if he wants, he could leave them part of the land if he wants, but he's not obligated to. He is entitled instead to give them a certain amount of money, and therefore pay off their debt that way.
We learned also that somebody that doesn't pay to deal with one is a small amount.
Maybe, but no, we're talking about where it's enough. We're talking about where that amount of field is enough to be considered a field by itself. And Baba Basra talks about that you have the minimum size of a field is an area of 9 kavim. So here we're talking about that 1/6 he would have given them is an area of at least 9 kavim. That's not the problem. It is big enough to be considered a field. But nevertheless, Reb Chanina had thought to say he has to give them the land. And Tosfos talks about that. Since the land was in the reshus of their father, so in other words, Tosfos says now you could have a case, for example, which we talked about earlier in our Masechta, where a person goes into somebody else's land and works it and plants in it without reshus of the owner. We talked about it in the previous parak. So he's entitled to a certain reimbursement for his expenses or for the shvach, whichever is less. But we certainly don't say that he's entitled to a certain part of the land in compensation for that. Why is Rav Chanina even thinking over here that he's entitled to keep that they did the shvach in effect on what's his land? Why should they be entitled to any part of the land? So Tosfos says, first of all, it was in the chazaka of their father, and second of all, maybe even in that case, if I heard of the six de chaveri, maybe Rav Chanina thought that in fact you would give them that in fact you would have to pay off the guy with land. Anyway, so the Gemara is saying, not so. You can pay him off. You can pay him off with money. And the reason why that is mid Rav Nachman, we learn that from what Rav Nachman says. The Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Shmuel, Shloisha Shaman Lahanas Shvach. There are three cases where we figure out the amount of shvach on the property, or malin oisin bedamim, and we figure out the value of it, and we remove them from the karka with money. So in other words, there are three cases where exactly like that. We have an issue where land originally was worth X amount. Now plus shvach, it's worth more. And now a person is entitled to take that plot of land. But now when he's reimbursing them for the shvach, he doesn't have to give them a portion of the land to pay off the shvach. Instead, he's allowed to pay them in money. What are these three cases? The first one is when a bechur reimburses the non-bechur, meaning, so you have like this, the bechur gets a double portion, but we're going to learn in Bava Basra that the bechur doesn't get a double portion of any shvach that was added to the property after the father passed away. So now let's say the brothers jointly inherited. Let's to keep things simple. Let's say we're talking about just two brothers, a bechor and a pashut. So now ordinarily, the bechor is going to get 2/3 of the property, and the pashut is going to get 1/3. So now what happens is, in between, after the father passed away, they improved the property. So now when the bechor is going to get his double portion, when he's going to get the 2/3 of the property, we have to figure out the amount of that shvach. So then he pays back the poshut. He doesn't have to give him a percentage of the land, an extra amount of the land to compensate for that. He can give him money instead. So you can say, I'm getting 2/3 of the actual land. As far as the shvach, I'll reimburse you with money.
But if they both share the land, then why can't
they? If they both share it, then fine. We're talking about eventually they want to divide it.
Right, but if they're dividing it and they're both going to have part of the land, then why we have to give them that money?
Because the fact is, the Bechor is not getting a double portion of the Shvach. So let's say, for example, to begin with, let's say the land was worth 300. So now, ordinarily, if they divided it right then, as it's worth 300 as soon as the father passes away, then fine, the Bechor is getting $200 worth of land, and the Poshet is getting 100. Now they've improved it. Now, by the time they come to divide it, it's worth 400. That extra 100, the Bechor does not get a double portion of. He only gets a single portion of. So therefore, what we have is, now, in other words, if we were to calculate, we would have to say the Bechor is going to get then 250 worth of the land, and the Poshet is going to get 150 worth of it. Rather than doing that, the Bechor can say, I'm going to get 2/3 of the land. 2/3 of the land now is worth more than what I should be getting, because 2/3 of 400 is it's going to be more than his amount. Fine, I'll reimburse you in money. I'm not obligated to give you a larger percentage of the land in return for that. Yeah.
So he gives him like
33 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
He has a choice to give him money if he wants. Right. That's what Rabbi Yehuda, that's what Rabbi Nachman is saying in the name of Shmuel. That's one of the cases where Malin Oysed Bedamim. The second case is a Baal Choyv, like we're talking about over here, who's collecting from Yisoyim. Not only as far as Yisoyim, but Rashi also adds the same thing. In other words, when Lekuchas bought the property, it's the same thing with Yisoyim and Lekuchas. Either way, he's collecting the land together with the Shvach. We can't tell him that he has to give them back a certain part of the karka to make up for the shvach. Instead, he can give them money. And the third one, uksubas isha, obalchoy uksubas isha liyisoyim. Sorry, I read it wrong. Obalchoy uksubas isha liyisoyim. The second case is whether a balchoy or uksuba is being collected from yisoyim, where they collect the entire land and reimburse for the shvach. And the third one, a Baal Choyv Lekuchas, and the third one is where a Baal Choyv is collecting from buyers, not from Yisoyim, but rather from other people who bought the property. So we see, therefore, that in the case where he's collecting from Yisoyim, then he doesn't have to reimburse them for the Shvach by giving them part of the land back. Instead, he can give them money to reimburse them for that.
He has a choice, right.
The point is, in other words, because in all these cases, his shibud came before they ever got the land. So as the Gemara is going to explain soon, again, especially we're talking about the land was an apusiki. So therefore, he has a shibud on this particular piece of land before they ever inherited it or bought it or whatever.
But
The Bechor also, because it means because he's inheriting it from, he's inheriting Muchzek, what was Muchzek by his father, as opposed to then afterwards we have Rori, what's going to come after the father passed away, where he doesn't get a double portion of it.
But he's got a Muchzek on the extra, and
right, well, that's why we're saying that, but we're saying that nevertheless, though, he's considered Muchzek in the land, and therefore, because the land itself, he has the, okay. Does that mean that Shmuel in fact holds that the Baal Chayv has to give the Shvach back to the Lekuchas, back to the people who bought the property? Since when is the Lekeach entitled to keep the Shvach anyway? Doesn't Shmuel himself say that the Baal Chayv, when he collects from the land, he also collects from the Shvach? So he doesn't need to reimburse the Loiva for that, because the idea is, in other words, when we say that what happens is when you sell a field, you're also including when you're including Achrayus in it, that you're going to reimburse him in case the field gets taken away from him in payment of your debt, and you're including also the Shvach. So therefore, he's not entitled to receive back the Shvach, because he's going to be eventually receiving it back from the Loiva, and not from the Malva who's taking it. So the answer is Vachitema, and the Gemara continues, if you're going to say Loi Kasha Kan B'Shvach HaMagil HaKsifayim Kan B'Shvach She'en Magil HaKsifayim, are you going to say that there's a difference between whether the Shvach is already ready for the shoulders or not, which means, in other words, Rashi says, so here and in other places, Rashi explains that Magil HaKsifayim means it's almost ready, but not quite. It's still, if it doesn't need the Karka anymore, then it's not considered Shvach, then it's considered Peiros. But here we're talking about where it still needs the land for a little bit, and therefore it would still be considered Shvach. Shvach we're talking about where the field itself has, we're talking about agricultural work or whatever, Hamagil HaKsifayim means that it's reaching the shoulders, meaning that the produce is already up to the shoulders. It's already grown as high as the shoulders, and it only needs the land a little bit. Earlier in the Masechta, at the beginning, in the first parak, we talked about the Shvach Hamagil HaKsifayim, and we had other explanations of it as well. It means that it's already been harvested and it's ready to be carried away. It still needs to be dried in the field a little bit, whatever. Anyway, so you're going to say that there's a difference between what kind of Shvach they're talking about. No, we find that such things happen all the time. And Shmuel says that the Malva is entitled to take even Shvach HaMagil HaKsifayim. So there's no case where a Lokeach is going to be reimbursed for the Shvach by the Baal Chayv who takes away the field. He's always, whatever reimbursement he's going to get is going to be from the Loiva who sold him the property in the first place. So what are we saying, that there are three cases where Malin Bedomim, where we figure out the amount of Shvach and reimburse him with, and the Malva has the ability to reimburse him with money, when it comes out that to begin with, he's taking everything, including the Shvach, and there's no reimbursement at all.
In this case, we see
that whether it's Magil HaKsifayim or not, we're saying the Malva is entitled to take the entire property, including the Shvach, and he doesn't have to reimburse the Lekeach anything. Here, let's put names on the case. We have Reuven borrowed money from Shimon. Reuven later on sold a property of his to Levi. Now, Shimon is coming to take the property from Levi in collection of the debt. So now we're saying, Shmuel is saying that Shimon is entitled to take the entire property from Levi, the field plus the Shvach. So that's what the Gemara is going to answer, is we're talking about there's a difference whether it's worth more than the loan. At this point, the Gemara doesn't realize that distinction yet. So then the question is, so what are we saying that Shmuel is saying that Shimon is, what are we saying that Shimon takes the entire thing, but he has to reimburse Levi for the overage? What is he reimbursing? He's entitled to take the whole thing. So the answer is, it depends whether he's owed the amount of the field plus the Shvach or just the field. If he's owed only 100 and the field now with the Shvach is worth 120, he obviously can't take the whole thing without any reimbursement. He's not entitled to that. He's only entitled to 100 in payment of his debt. Therefore, if he's taking a field that's worth 120, he has to reimburse Levi somehow. So again, he has the, so Rabbi Chanina had said originally he has to reimburse him by leaving him 1/6 of the land. Now we're saying that no, based on what Shmuel is saying, in fact, he can just give him $20 in cash. So that would be what we're talking about, that he has to reimburse him. Whereas if he's owed the amount of land plus the shvach, then in fact he takes the whole thing, land and shvach. He takes the whole 120, and whatever Levi is going to get reimbursed is going to have to come from Reuven, the guy who sold him the property after he had taken out a loan. So the Gemara asks, V'chile masach shir aro shvacha. So, okay, so what are you telling me then? That if he's not owed the amount of the field plus the shvach, the yohiv lezuzi lelekeach, so you're telling me that he's able to just give money to the lekeach, or mesalikle, and remove him from the property, because then he takes over the property completely. The question is, hanicha lamanda oma, he is lezuzi lelekeach, lemotzi mesalikle lebalchoy. Now, in Ksubis, and also we had it at the beginning of our Masechta as well, if the Lekeach himself has money to pay off the loan, is he able to go? So now, let's say, for example, Levi has enough money to pay off the loan. Does he have the right to unilaterally to go and tell Shimon, who wants to take away the property from him, you know what, you want to take it away from me because Reuven owes you X amount. Instead of taking it away, here's the money. Let me pay you off and I'll stay in possession of the field. Does he have the ability to do that? Or can Shimon say, no, you know what, the property is, I have a shibud on the property. I demand to take the property. As far as that you don't want to lose the property, not my problem. Go back to Reuven and let him reimburse you. So
he's the one who bought it.
He bought it from Reuven. Yeah. So hanichal amanda ami isli zuzil lekeach loy motzim salik loy lebal choy. That works according to the opinion that even if the lekeach, even if Levi has money, he cannot remove the bal choy's rights over the property. In effect, in other words, we say that the lekeach is considered as though he's working the field while it belongs to the malva. So therefore, so the same way as if you go into somebody else's field and start working it, you don't say, well, now I took over this field. Now if you want to remove me, you're going to have to, then I have the right unilaterally to go and buy the field from you. No, if you're willing to sell to me, fine. But if not, then not. The same way, according to that opinion, Levi, the Lekeach, has no right to say to Shimon, the Malve, I want to stay in possession of this field, and therefore I'm going to give you money and you have to accept it. So then, according to that, then very well, that explains why so that explains why then if Levi is not owed the full amount of the land plus the shvach, then that explains why he has to pay the lekeach. But if we follow the opinion that says that when the lekeach himself, when Levi himself has the money, he could tell the bal choyv, here is the money and you don't have any rights to this field, well then, namalay, so why can't Levi to begin with tell Shimon, look, if I had the money, if I had the whole 120, then I would have taken you away from the whole land, I would have paid you the entire 120, and I'd remain in undisturbed possession of the field. Right, now I don't actually have the money to pay you 120, but I have some of it, because in effect, because after all, the loan is, because after all, in this case, where the loan is only 100, and then therefore, to begin with, you're only entitled to 100 out of the 120 of the field. Why should you take over the whole thing? And I'm only entitled to a cash payment. Instead, havli griva de arabaroi. Instead, leave me a portion of the land, of my land, shir shvachoi, equal to my shmach. Why doesn't he have a claim like, why doesn't he have a valid claim like that? And therefore, Shimon, the malva, would have to leave him a percentage of the field that will make up for the shvach. He was here before also, right. The answer is because the case we're talking about over here is the field that was made in Zaposiki. Where he says to begin with, when Reuven borrows the money from Shimon, you're going to be paid only from this karka. So as we said at the beginning of the sugya, as the Rambanan wrote at the beginning of the sugya, that yes. So now. He is considered all along to be the owner of the property, and now, therefore, even though there's shvach involved over here, so fine, at most the loiva is entitled, no, not the loiva, the lekeach, is entitled to be reimbursed for his shvach, but that's it. He can't demand a portion of the land, because the land, to begin with, was all under the apusiki, to the malva, and therefore he is, in fact, entitled to the entire land. Getting back to one last case involving Arisim and Choychrim, the Mishnah says, I'm a Kabbal Sodom Chaveir L'Shavua Echad B'Shva Me'es Zuz. If a person receives land from somebody else for one, and then the deal is shavua echad, one whole group of 7 years, the shvameis zuz, and the deal was that he's going to pay him 700. The makabel is going to pay 700 zuz. So now we talk about at the beginning of the parak. You have three possible arrangements. You have an oris where he's getting a percentage of the crops. You have a choicher where he's paying a fixed amount of crops. So he's paying, let's say, 10 saw or whatever of crops. And then you have a soicher where he pays money for it. So here we're talking about a soicher. So the deal was that he pays money for the use of the land over the years. He rents it, yeah. So here he rented it for Shavua Echad for one whole group of 7 years, Bishvameis Zuz, where he's going to pay 700 Zuz. So now the question is Shmita included? Because after all, Shmita, you can't work the land. So he wants to say, therefore, that I don't have 1 year and I can't work the land. Therefore, I should be entitled to an eighth year at the end. We say Shvius Min HaMinyan, the Shmita is considered one of the 7 years. Because when he says Shavua Echad means a package deal of 7 years. And of course, that necessarily includes the Shmita year. And therefore, so he received it, I'll das that. What is he going to do with it during that seventh year? He could do it, for example, he could spread out fruit to dry or things like that. There are things he can do with it that are not actual agricultural work, which nevertheless, he could have the use of that field for 7 years. In fact, Toras Chaim says that's why the Mishnah mentions the case where it was 700 zuz. You would think 700 specifically implies it must mean 100 per year. So therefore, why would he be paying 100 for Shmita when he can't work the land? Nevertheless, we say it doesn't work that way. On the other hand, people I men who sheva shonim b'shvameis zuz. On the other hand, if he didn't say shavua echad, which means a group of 7 years, rather he said for 7 years, then and the 700 zuz ain shvius min aminin, then shvius is not included, and therefore he's entitled to an extra year at the end. Now we're in the middle of the Mishnah. We're shifting gears completely. The rest of this Mishnah and the Gemara on it and the next Mishnah are going to talk about the dinim of the Torah tells us in a couple of places that you have to pay a worker on time. So now you have one place it mentions it is in Parashas Kedoshim, Lo Solim Po Ula Socher Itcha Ad Boker. Another place it mentions it in Parashas Kisetze, Lo Solvay Olav HaShemesh. So now the next couple of blocks are going to deal with all the ins and outs of those dinim. The Mishnah says, "Schir yom goyva kol alayla." A person who was hired to work by day has during the following night to collect his debt. We're going to see in the Gemara tomorrow, Best Hashem, we'll talk about a machlokas Rav and Shmuel about certain details in our Mishnah. The idea being, in other words, that the balabas may not have the money, may not have the cash on hand. So you can't expect him the moment the guy is finished working, he immediately has to give him his pay packet. He's entitled to a certain amount of time to go and raise the money for it. Schir laila goyva kol hayom, and vice versa. If the guy worked during the night, then his time for being paid is during the entire day. Schir shois. If a person was hired only for a certain number of hours and it ended before the day or the night was over, goyva kol alayla, then he can collect. Then he can collect all night and all day. We'll see in the Gemara whether it means and, whether it means the night and the day, or whether it means one or the other, depending whether he was working by day or by night. We'll learn those details in the Gemara tomorrow. Bez Hashem. The Mishnah continues, Schir Shabbos, if a person was hired for an entire week, Schir Chodesh, or a month, Schir Shana, or for a year, Schir Shavua, or for a period of 7 years, in all those cases, Yotze Bayom, if he finishes his term of employment during the day, Goyva Kol Hayom, then he has the rest of the day to collect his pay, Yotze Balayla, Goyva Kol Hayom, Kol Hayom, and if he leaves by night, then he has the night and the day. So in other words, we don't say in that case that the balabas has to pay him every day or every week or whatever, since he was hired for a certain term of time. It can even be for years. Then he only has to pay him at the end. The Gemara elsewhere calls this schiros enim shtalemis el ol v'soif, that the schiros is only payable at the end. He accrues it over time. Every time he works, he's accruing another pruta that he's earned. But nevertheless, the guy is only chayav to pay him at the end. But then at the end, then he has a certain amount of time before he's over on the mitzvahs of delaying the payment.
If I was working for someone for 7 years, I kind of want something in between.
If you arrange that, then fine. But otherwise, yeah. It has to be arranged. Otherwise, the understanding is that he only has to pay him in a lump sum at the end of the 7 years. Yeah, you know what? Think of the story, for example, of the poor guy who works for the rich guy in the south of Eretz Yisrael over there for 3 years, where it says it was Rabbi Akiva working for Rabbi Eliezer, and then he asks him at the end of the 3 years before Erev Yom Kippur, where's my payment? I don't have any money, and I don't have any pillows, and I don't have any animals, and so on and so forth. So we see that he was asking for a lump sum at the end of the 3 years. So yeah.
Oh, and what was the end of the story?
The end of the story is that because Rabbi Akiva was danim l'kaf schos, you didn't have money on hand because it was tied up in your business, and you didn't have animals on hand because you had rented them out to people. And he had been makdish all of his, and he had been makdish all of his nechassim, and then he was makdish neder, and now he's able to give everything that he needs to. So, Tosfos, by the way, compares this with you have here the pasuk saying lois solin for ulas socher. You're not allowed to leave it overnight by you. We find in other contexts, we find when it comes to korbanos that lo yolin means as soon as it comes alois hashach. So how does that compare with over here? What we're talking about, kol alayla or kol ayoyim or whatever. In other words, there can be a case over here where he's not over on bal tolin, even though alois hashachar has passed. Why is it by korbanos we always say it's alois hashachar? And Tosfos points out because you could, because after all, you could bring them any time during the night, so therefore it comes already in the morning and it's considered lino, although Tosfos says it's a doich. Let's finish up over here. Give us a minute, please. So the Gemara says, Tananabam, minayim l'schir yoyim shegoyva kol alayla. How do we know that when a person was hired for the day that he can collect any time during the night? And in other words, that the balabas has that entire night to pull together the money, but only at the end of the night is going to be over on baltolin. Talmud Loima, therefore, the pasuk says, "Solin for ulas socher itchad worker." The hired wage of the worker should not remain with you until the morning. So implying that he has all night to give. How do we know a person was hired for the night that he has the entire day to pay him? It says you have to pay him on his day. So the psukim are referring respectively to a person who worked by night and by day. But you want to ask Ve'ema Ibcha, maybe the other way around. Maybe say that the person who was working by day has to be paid during the day, and the person who was working by night has to be paid by night, and you don't have any grace period. And the answer is schirut, as we just said, schirut ain't a mishtalem, it's elal v'soif, because the payment is only payable at the end. So therefore, so during the time, so for example, a person is working during the day, you're certainly not chayiv to pay him during the day itself. You only become chayiv at the end of the day. Therefore, you have actually you can't say in the words lo sover all of Hashemesh, the sun should not set, and you haven't paid him because his work is only over when the sun sets. Therefore, so that means, so necessarily, therefore, the pasuk that refers to him must be the one that says lois solin, which implies when it comes morning the next day, then you're over. But up until then, you have the entire night to go and pull together the money. And the Gemara, we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and we'll talk about various more dinim in this connection. We'll also talk about Be'ez Hashem, a sicha, where the Rebbe talks about a hurrah and avoida from this din of paying a worker on time.